This is HPR episode 2913 entitled Windows, SDN, and Firewalls, and is part of the series Networking. It is hosted by Bito, and is about 41 minutes long, and carries an explicit flag. The summary is: being a Windows user for the past 3 years, information on SDN, and a DIY approach to a home firewall.
This episode of HPR is brought to you by Archive.org. Support universal access to all knowledge by heading over to archive.org/donate.
And here we go. So, hello everyone. This is Beto on Hacker Public Radio. So it's been about, last upload from me was March 19th, 2014, about 1,999 days ago. It's about 5 years, but, it's been a long 5 years. So first thing I want to say is, I just want to say that Hacker Public Radio has been an instrumental community for me for the past 5 years. I've been listening to Hacker Public Radio, and it's provided me a lot of insight on what's been going on throughout the community and a lot of the changes that have gone that have been going on in the world. But in the last 5 years. I've been able to travel the world for work. I've deployed a lot of things for work, a lot of cool things, a lot of really cool and amazing things. I've taken on a new role, which moved me from working solely inside of data centers to working a lot more with networks. But in those 5 years, I learned a lot about data center operations, data center infrastructure. I learned a lot about the different parts of the world and how we all come together as one planet. I've also read over like 36 books in the past 5 years at least, and that's been very useful for my career and for my personal life. And another thing I've learned is that it's really important to have your house in order. What I mean by that is opportunities are going to come across every day, but if you're not ready to take those opportunities, you're not going to be entirely focused or 100% committed to make sure that opportunity succeeds. Some of the things that I've done in the past 5 years, and from a personal perspective, which is to help get my house in order, has been paying off debt, and focusing on long-term financial goals. I know that's something that most people don't think about here on, at a young age especially, but, having the ability to, get rid of the mundane expenses and, you know, service bills here and expenses, you know, spending money over here and credit cards over there, getting rid of all that stuff from your day to day can help you tremendously on developing long-term financial goals. And having those long-term financial goals helps you identify where you need to focus on, and also helps you in your decision making when taking on new opportunities. But three things that I continue to live by, something that I've learned on the Finding Japan podcast, but it's humility, humanity, and harmony. These are three things I have committed to strive for in my personal life, work, and hobbies. And you know, this is in the past 5 years, I've seen I've been in and out of a lot of airports. I've seen a lot of different IT infrastructures and a lot of cool technologies. But without thinking about the people first and thinking about how people make the world go round and how we should always keep in mind of the folks who are around us helping us deliver that awesome next, you know, shiny project or the awesome next shiny technology, you know, keeping those people around and taking care of them and treating them with respect and as your peer will, you know, keep you on an even and predictable course in life. And that's something that I found to be very important. But enough of the intro. Let's start the show off in the wrong direction. Windows. So in the past 5 years, from 2014 to 2016, I was using Fedora Linux exclusively as my primary workstation. I actually did something a little crazy where I was using it as a primary workstation, and I would have KVM running, and I'll have two VMs, one which was my firewall, and the second which was just a, you know, just a random, you know, VPN box. I would have those two VMs running in the background while I use the workstation as an everyday workstation. Sounds a little crazy, but I learned a lot doing things that way. I learned how to automate the startup and decryption of hard drives and using USB keys, and I learned a lot about automating KVM hosts as the best way you possibly can. I learned a lot about introducing 10 gigabit networking into your environment. That's when I first started to touch 10 gigabit NICs and tying those as bridge, setting up bridges so that my VM host, my host can use that for my clients. So I found that to be a very amazing experience to have put myself through the heartache of having a Fedora box be my primary workstation as well as run my hypervisor and run all my VMs, which was my firewall for the house. So that was a very interesting experience. But what I learned out of that was, number one, I learned that when you break something and it's a critical system to your entire household, you better know how to recover that immediately. If you don't, you're going to have a lot of angry users. I feel that having learned how to have this all-in-one box do everything inside of the home, it was a great experience, but I realized that I needed a more stable environment, something that I can test things in my lab and have the other half of the network not be touched by that, so that other folks can use or have other services on my network run without any issues. So this was my adventure into Windows. So 2016, I believe this was January 2016, I began using Windows as a full-time machine. I use a lot of old hardware, some AMD FX processor stuff, and just old stuff, but it still ran Windows 10 without any issues. I still was able to use most of the features available in Windows 10. But one of the things that I found to be a longing that I had missed from a Linux command line was, you know, whether I'm using Aptitude or Yum or whatever the other tool is in Fedora, I realized that I wanted to use something similar to a package manager in PowerShell. So what I came across was something called Chocolaty, Chocolaty? Yeah, it's gotta be Chocolaty. And this tool is a excellent tool for Think of it as a package manager that you can run inside of Windows PowerShell, and you can, from a few commands, Choco install Audacity, and in a few seconds, it'll parse you and say, "Hey, are you sure you want to install Audacity?" And sure enough, you'll get the latest up version of Audacity installed onto your Windows machine. If you ever want to upgrade any software that you installed via Choco, you just Choco update all, and it'll update all the software packages that you've controlled using that command line tool. An amazing tool, very easy to install, and very reliable in terms of having the most up-to-date packages available. So most people out there, I feel that, you know, when you're downloading software off the internet, or you're downloading it off some sketchy website, or, you know, you're just installing something randomly, I feel that, you know, that's probably one of those experiences in Windows that just makes it feel so dumbed down that doesn't really make you want to use it anymore, because you feel like you don't need this dumbed down version where I have to click through this website and click on this box and click on this download link and click on this executable and click through this executable and hit next. I think that's one of the things that I definitely give Linux and, you know, any operating system, any Linux operating system, props for having a very good package manager. So Chocolaty, it's a great tool for downloading free software from the Windows PowerShell command line. A second tool that I would say that has been instrumental in my Windows experience for the past 3 years has been Sublime Text. Sublime Text, it's an excellent tool. This is a text editor. It's very powerful. I use this to quickly parse data and conduct, you know, crazy regexes to allow me to edit data and then copy that data over to a spreadsheet or CSV values and do something else with it. Overall, just a great tool. I feel that it's a little more powerful because one example that I have for using Sublime Text is, you know, let's say you have, you know, you copy and paste some value off of some inspect element in Chrome, and, you know, you want to be able to organize this data so that for every div tag or whatever, you want a new line. Hey, just like you do in VI or sed, you know, you're looking up doing a regex, and then you'll say, hey, insert a new line here. But one thing I like about Sublime Text is that, you know, you can regex search, you know, those div tags or whatever it is that you're searching for, and it'll basically highlight every single one of those, and it'll give you the opportunity to hit the enter button and you get a new line. It'll give you opportunity to backspace that regex value and replace it with something by typing and replacing and seeing the live update of that. I feel that that's a very powerful tool because so many times have I thought that my regex search or sed or my awk has done something, and the only time I find out is when I run the data through the whatever tool that I'm using and find out, oh, it only actually replaced, you know, half or just the one or just, you know, 1 out of 16. You know, I just find that visual response of what I'm editing to be a lot more powerful inside of Sublime Text. There's a ton of other tools and features inside Sublime Text, and I highly recommend it. This definitely something that you should put in your Windows toolbox. All right. So, in summary, you know, it's important to understand what everyday Windows users are going through. I've been able to solve a lot of problems by having this profile of a user in my toolbox. You know, I guess the concept I'm giving is that there's the concept of switching hats. And, you know, one of these hats is a Linux user, one of them is a Mac user, one of them is a Chrome OS user, one of them is a Windows user, and I'm able to switch hats frequently because I force myself to explore using these operating systems as an everyday tool. What I've found is that using Windows to me is not the same as for most people. And the reason why I say that is because for most people, they are using Windows in the more dumbed down sense. You know, they're just clicking through boxes and they're just accepting EULAs and just using the tool and that's it. They don't really have an understanding of the deeper nuances and some of the deeper things you can do inside of Windows. All right, so in summary, the importance of being an everyday Windows user just allows me to focus on solving problems in different and unique ways, using different tools, using tools that other people are using out there. And the beautiful part is that I don't really lose touch in my Linux, command line foo. I have my Ubuntu shell here. I have a Kali Linux VM, and these are all tools that just allow me to stay focused. All right, so moving on to the next one, web stuff. All right, there's an awesome website that I've discovered recently, and it allows you to test and debug your regex. This is called regex101.com. What I find very helpful about this site is that as your whatever regexes that you're inputting into the site, you can put sample data there, and it will also basically show you what the result of your regex formula is. In addition to that, it will also provide some information about the regex itself, what the different components of your regex are doing. And I find this to be extremely helpful if you know, whether you're new or this is something that you're very accustomed to doing. It's just a very helpful website that allows you to test your regex formulas against some sample data. The last thing that's extremely beneficial is that it allows you to share these regex formulas with everyone using the results from the test data. So if you have, you know, a regex value and some test data and you want to compare or accelerate or share this on some site, you can use this site to save, similar to Pastebin or something of that nature, to share your regex and the sample data and provide that as an example for others to either critique or to use in their projects. So I find this to be a very helpful site, regex101.com. All right, maps. In the US, I know GPSs and phone GPSs and OpenStreetMap and Google Maps, and we have a lot of map tools available to us in all across the world. And these are all digital map tools that require some sort of network connection. Some, may require you to download this information ahead of time before planning a hike or a trip or something like that. And one of the really good map resources that are out there are the USGS maps. What makes this a very unique site to download maps from is that you are able to download PDF versions of map sections that are 1 and 24,000 units or 7.5 minute degree maps. So this is an awesome resource if you're into land navigation using a map ruler or map protractor and being able to navigate latitude and longitude positions using a quadrant based map. I believe that's the correct tool or correct term. But anyway, a quadrangle based map. These are all topo maps, so you're going to get elevations, you're going to get major roadways, you're going to get land masses such as, you know, rivers and lakes and stuff like that. These are not going to be like flight maps where you're going to get airport data. And maybe in the next episode, I'll locate a resource that allows you to download those types of maps, especially if you're like a drone pilot or someone who's still going to go out there on a hiking trip or backpacking trip and want to know, and you want to know where some of your, some of the aerial maps that are available out there, because it's really helpful to know what, where some of the air traffic, what are some aerial maps that, pilots would use, because, that could be an instrumental resource in a, survival situation, especially when you're out there on your own hiking in the wilderness. But, I definitely recommend this. This is going to be on the USGS. You have to go to the store, the USGS store, and you know, you can purchase maps that are already printed on a piece of paper, or you can just download the maps yourselves on a, as a PDF and print them on your own paper on a plotter or something like that. So I highly recommend it. And most of the maps that I've seen, they're about within two years. They're around 1 to 2 years old, which is great. It's no problem. But the biggest benefit out of this is that you're going to have the quadrangle, or your Latin longs are going to be painted or displayed on these maps, which will allow you to conduct land navigation using a map protractor or map ruler. But you'll need a 1 in 24,000 scaled ruler. So you can't use like just, if you use like a 1 in 1,000 or use like a different, if you use military style, if you use anything different, you won't get the accuracy that you're looking for when you're doing analog land navigation. So last website that I have for the web stuff is SDN information. So if you're starting out in software defined networking, I highly recommend that you take a look at this GitHub site that I have. It's called awesome-sdn, and this website is basically a repository or a source of a lot of different types of information regarding SDN. Now, if you're just starting with SDN, or you're already deploying this in production at a site at your job, this is still a great site. I use this for my northbound network switches and my Aruba switches that are SDN capable or use OpenFlow. If you're using other switches that have different network operating systems on there, This is still a great site to identify different types of controllers and libraries and resources to allow you to configure your SDN environment. The most important part here is that if you work on network infrastructure or network automation or networks in general, you have to start thinking about network automation. You have to start thinking about how the network is going to deploy itself, how the networking can become more self-healing, how the information, like such as SNMP traps and stuff like that, how those things can be more easily and automated, more easily communicated to you know, network operators or network administrators or network engineers, so that your environment can sustain network outages and network changes or protocol changes. So if you're not looking into SDN, or if you're not looking into network automation in general, such as using Ansible or, you know, some other, you know, maybe some proprietary level automation tool, you have to start looking into this stuff. SDN is just one component, in my opinion, of many tools available. One component of the many available tools out there. I guess that's the right thing to say. But definitely start looking at SDN. Check out Northbound Networks for their SDN devices. They got the cheapest switches you can purchase at 100 meg and 1 gig. You can find a couple of other devices out there. For some of the more mainstream switching providers. But they get very expensive. The cheapest that you can find out there using a 10G port is probably going to be about $500. You can build your own, and this is going to segue into my firewall my firewall topic, but you can build your own for very inexpensive, you know, sub $200 or even sub $100 if you want to go, you know, bare bones. But yeah, highly recommend looking at a OpenFlow, open virtual switching, looking at network operating systems, and you know, SDN controllers. These are all great things to check out. And also, you can also look at, there's also a way that you can virtualize an SDN environment where if you just want to test, you can create virtual switches, and in that fashion, you can just test a SDN controller against the virtual switches and have virtual nodes tied to the virtual switches, and that will allow you to test your SDN environment using just virtual resources, which is a very common tool, which is very common when you're using Genosys. When you're using, what is it? What is this tool called? It's Genosys. So the tool is called GNS3. So GNS3 is your way of deploying an SDN environment without using any physical hardware. But anyway, moving on. And one more thing to add to the SDN topic is zero tier. This is an awesome UDP pinning SDN or SD-WAN tool. This is basically edge networking for your mobile devices and allows you to basically connect to other devices that you own and you control, and they have a virtual switch on the actual device which connects back, and the controller will communicate to those devices how to connect to the other devices in your environment, whether that's going to be, you know, your firewall back at home or another mobile device in another place in, on Earth. So and that's zero tier. I'll have those in the show notes. Home hacks. All right, I only have one here, and this is a home phone. If you are looking for a home phone and you already have a Google Voice number, then I highly recommend getting yourself an OB200 from OBTalk, and this will allow you to basically deploy a home landline phone system over a SIP telephone or VoIP telephone adapter, which will allow you to connect your Google Voice number as a SIP and other SIP resources as well. So if you want 911, you can pay for that per month and you'll get 911 service. Or if you just want a free home phone, you just use your Google Voice, connect that to your OBTalk system, your OB200, and from there, you'll be good to go. You'll be able to reach your home phone from any other phone, and you'll have a home phone number, which is a fantastic solution, especially if you're not interested in purchasing or paying for a VoIP service through, you know, your internet service provider. So it's free. It's the service is free, which is using Google Voice. The device is about $50, I believe. I can't recall, but I'll have a link to it in the show notes. And fantastic tool. All right, last one is firewalls. Okay, so in the past year and a half, I've been using Ubiquiti as my primary network environment, and it's been a pretty good and useful tool. What I like about Ubiquiti is that you'll have basically a controller that will deliver that will send the configurations over to the firewall, to the switch, to your wireless devices, and it's very useful. Very useful because, you know, you're just using one web interface to control your entire network environment, similar to what an SDN environment is. And I think Ubiquiti, their sales team classifies this as an SDN tool or SDN network tool. One thing that I've discovered is that using the Unified Secured Gateway, the 3-port device, which is about $100 US, It's a decent device if you're at a 50 megabits to 100 megabits WAN uplink. But if you have a 1 gigabit WAN uplink, this device is completely useless for that type of network connectivity. And the reason why I say that is because if you were to enable the IPS and the IDS and all the other features that are tied to this device, you will have issues with your firewall capabilities. And what I mean by that is, for example, let's say you have a 1 gigabit WAN uplink, and you're going from your modem to your firewall at 1 gigabit connectivity, and then you're going from your firewall to your LAN at 1 gigabit connectivity. Now the problem with all this is that you will not have end-to-end 1 gigabit throughput. The reason behind that is because the ASIC inside of the firewall, heating, the features or the capabilities of the firewall, the bus, all that is going to have a very important part in how your firewall performs when you start enabling these additional features. So one of the problems with the Unified Secure Gateway, the 3-port one, is, or USG3, is that if you were to enable IPS, IDS, and try to push 1 gigabit worth of traffic throughout your household up to the WAN, your firewall is going to reach a limitation. And for example, let's say we have about 1 million packets per second that we want to transmit over our firewall. If we were to do the math, and let's just cut that in half, let's say 500,000 packets per second. And let's say each packet is 100 bytes. When you do the math on this, what ends up happening is that you end up with approximately 400 megabits per second in throughput. So think about that. If your firewall needs the capability of transmitting 500,000 packets per second just to get 400 megabits per second, the ASIC or the CPU in that firewall has to be beefy enough to support that capability. And a lot of people have this problem when they're using these fanless firewall solutions, is that the CPU just can't handle 1 million packets per second. And 1 million packets per second is more or less the equivalent of getting 800 to 900 megabits per second in firewall throughput. And we're just talking firewalls. We're not talking IPS, IDS. Once you start enabling IPS, IDS, your CPU is working harder, and it may throttle down your traffic to 50 megs per second. So think about that. You've got a 1 gigabit WAN uplink that can only transmit at 50 megabits per second over your firewall, and that's it. You're done. You're not going to be able to get your 1080p. You're not going to be able to game. You're not going to be able to do uploads or anything like that. You are limited to that 50 megabits per second with the IPS enabled and firewall capabilities enabled. So the best alternative would be to purchase dedicated hardware. And what I mean by that is, you could go with the Ubiquiti XG, which is, 10G capable and 1 million packets per second capable. You'll get the full throughput out of the device, but you're paying over $1,000 for that. That is a solution that is not good, or not a good option for a hobbyist or a home network hobbyist or someone with just a simple home network. If you want to save some cash and you want to still get that over 1 million packets per second throughput and have all the capabilities of using IPS, IDS, VPN, IPsec, whatever jargon you want to throw in there, whatever special words you want to throw in, you'll get the capability if you bought dedicated hardware. So a small form factor workstation like an HP Z240, that's going to allow you to deploy a 4-core 8-thread Xeon processor, 32 gigabits of RAM, 2 PCIe by 16 lanes using by 8 with a by with either by 16 or by 8 connectivity, and with just that alone, you'll be able to well surpass the 1 million packets per second connectivity. By having a 1 gigabit connection on board and then deploying a a low profile 2-port 10 gigabit SFP plus NIC on there, that's it. You will have the ability to do a lot more than you could with a USG3, and you would have saved almost about $500, even $700 than if you by opting out of purchasing an XG or high end dedicated hardware. And so the most important part about this is the SFF option, a small form factor option. You want something that's small, that's going to live inside of a network closet or someplace where heat is going to, penetrate it 24/7. You want this thing to be able to stay cool on its own, have some fans running on it. You want this to have the ability to run a Xeon processor. With Xeon processors, you have low clock rates, 2.3, 2.0, 3, maybe even 3.0 if you spend some big dollars on there, on the CPU. But at least you get 4 cores, 8 threads out of the thing most of the time. You could even go cheaper and go Core i3, Core i4, Core i5, Core i7. And these are all going to be, fourth generation Ivy Bridge, processors. So those things are out there for less than $100 sometimes. With 32 gigabytes of RAM, you got plenty of RAM, to do whatever you want with this, dedicated firewall hardware. And you have at least 4 slots to load up a, 3.5-inch drives. If you want, you could even purchase PCIe adapters that allow you to plug in a NVMe drive, which will be fantastic solution to speed up your storage. And in the end, you have a dedicated system that is for your firewall that has 10G connectivity, or even 4x. You can even deploy multiple 1 gig. NICs, whatever your flavor of connectivity you want, you can deploy here. And in the end, you can have well past the 1 million packets per second. You can enable almost all the features available in pfSense or Sophos XG. And this will be a very great piece of equipment to have on your network and to allow for you to freely do whatever you want by utilizing that 1 gigabit WAN uplink. So to circle this all around with the intro and with my Windows discussion, one thing that I have done is that I've actually migrated from a dedicated firewall system to a virtualized firewall system. And what I've done is I've taken a small form factor PC, like an HP Z240, paid $150 for the thing or whatever it was on eBay at the time, loaded up some RAM, loaded up a decent Xeon CPU, put a hard drive in there, and installed a hypervisor. After I installed the hypervisor, from there I was able to deploy firewalls as VMs. And by deploying the firewall as a VM, I do lose some performance, but nothing that I'm going to notice with my 1 gigabit WAN uplink. And what I've gained out of all this is the freedom to run multiple firewall operating systems on the same dedicated hardware. And I've been able to switch between firewalls. I've been able to load balance between firewalls. I've been able to do performance tests against firewalls, do comparison tests, deploy pfSense as a VM here and, Sophos XG on another VM here and just swing the WAN uplink over virtually using the virtual switch in the hypervisor, and boom, I'm now in seconds, I'm connected to a pfSense box with all my brand new, security policy or firewall policies And oops, looks like I messed something up. Swing it back. And boom, I'm back on my Sophos XG running my network. So by virtualizing the firewall and treating it as a service to my environment and removing it as a dedicated operating system, I've been able to leverage this small form factor system to not only do firewall testing, but to do all sorts of other testing. And I found that to be a huge benefit in my environment. Okay. Well, I'm going to post this up now in Audacity, clean it up, add some intros and outros to it. But I do encourage everyone to continue uploading, continue discussing what you're doing and what you're getting yourself into. And I hope this was of some help. I hope this was some useful information that different people can take with them and use for whatever the projects they have planned. I appreciate your time listening. You all have a great one. And until next time, I hope it's not going to be 2,000 days later, but I'll try to upload something again soon. Until next time, everybody, take care and have a good one.
You've been listening to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.org. We are a community podcast network that releases shows every weekday, Monday through Friday. Today's show, like all our shows, was contributed by an HPR listener like yourself. If you ever thought of recording a podcast, then click on our contribute link to find out how easy it really is. Hacker Public Radio was founded by the Digital Dog Pound and the Infonomicon Computer Club and is part of the Binary Revolution at binrev.com. If you have comments on today's show, please email the host directly, leave a comment on the website, or record a follow-up episode yourself. Unless otherwise stated, today's show is released under a Creative Commons Attribution ShareAlike 3.0 license.